Canada's reputation for being a nation of polite, well-mannered, well-spoken people isn't a made-up tale. As a Canadian myself, this reputation becomes abundantly clear when we hit the road and journey out of Canada's cozy confines into other lands and witness how other people carry themselves, how other people interact with each other, and how welcomed we are when people find out we're Canadian. The whole Canadian flag on the luggage scheme goes a long way. You'll be surprised how many people have done an about-face when they've seen the flags on us at airports, in cabs, even with other bands. It's a testament to our international stature. However, this wonderful reputation we've managed to fashion for ourselves doesn't come without its testy side effects at the home front, namely our willful adherence as Canadians to keeping it nice and safe, whether it's nice and safe television shows, nice and safe radio personalities, nice and safe music, even nice and safe comedy. Every now and then, something swept under the carpet will rear its ugly head, only to be batted down again. As a guy in a hard rock band that sings about women in a most unchaste way, I have felt the wallop of Canadian disapproval, and felt it in the most Canadian way possible, by being politely ignored. It's frustration that, in hindsight, I now see as a boon, because it was these closed doors that ultimately gave us the motivation to leave and never look back, at least for 10 years. On these almost exiled jaunts over time, I've noticed another like-minded Canadian whose work caused him to turn to other places a little more hospitable and tolerant to his brazen ways, comedian Jason Rouse. Jason Rouse's comedy doesn't come without a series of disclaimers meant for the uptight, the priggish, and that gang we love to death, the politically correct. I think the two of us over the years have become friends due to our mutual distaste for upholding community standards. As a comedy fan myself, I was immediately drawn to Jason's style and knew within the first 5 minutes of watching him that it was only a matter of time before this guy would leave our one-horse town for bigger and better things. And he's done just that. He's toured the world, garnered his own comedy specials, won awards, and slipped into the much-prized festival circuit that few comedians can even tread water in. Again, a big thank you to Blue Mic Microphones for their Yeti mics we're using and Skullcandy headphones, especially their aviator headphones that I'm using. Also, if you like what you hear, please leave a comment on iTunes, because it makes us look good, and that's just the God-honest truth, okay? Before we start this podcast, and in true Jason Rouse style, I have to say, this isn't an episode for the faint of heart, so please note that. If the 7 words you can't say on television and the 4 words you can't say on a podcast still offend you, then I'd listen to another episode, but for Christ's sakes, it's Jason Rouse. And he's this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The guy who we've been chasing down, Nick and I, for months.
Chasing down.
Yeah, we're in the same show business. We always don't get a chance to. It's like I like going on my friends' band sites and stuff and seeing what countries, because usually their festivals are booked before their full tour stuff goes on. So I can find people and then go, okay, I'll just book a gig so I can go see my friend's band play the night before and then do a show. I got a paid flight and hotel and get to hang out with some friends.
Pals.
Which are good on the road, especially when you don't, your family's not around and stuff. When you meet up with people you like rolling with, and you can be anywhere in the globe, and as long as you, one of the two people are not in their hometown, you can still have a good time.
It's still weird to sort of when you think of you being in Toronto doing a bunch of shows, and then but you're on the road right now.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But it's Jason Rouse.
Jason Rouse. That's true.
So I mean, I don't know. I don't even know how long we've known each other.
Well, I think it all came, I think,
great question.
Nick, I think, had brought you down to, what was that?
It must have been Jerky Treats.
Yes.
I was always Jerky Treats.
What was that? But it was like meringue.
Rancho Relaxo.
And Nick had come in And I, that place was just a circus. There'd be homeless people would come and stand and sit down and heckle you and then leave.
I like to think of it as my birthplace.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good... I learned a lot there. It was a lot of fun. And then he'd mentioned... I think you came to one of the shows.
I'd accompanied Nick.
Yeah, first four, five or six shows.
Yeah,
those shows.
Yeah, yeah, and I think Jerky it was there Treats, for the first or second.
Yeah, well, Jerky Treats would have been like probably my third... or set or something. I don't know. I had the weirdest style of trying to be a comic.
Who
at that
kicked
point.
The ceiling?
Who kicked the ceiling at Jerky Treats?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what?
Remember that?
Yeah, I did see somebody.
Who was
that.
The tall guy that would kick the ceiling? There was some, because the ceiling, you were literally, the stage was just kind of an add on stuffed into a corner.
Rancho Relaxo stage.
And it was a fire hazard. As soon as you come to the stairs, like, if this place kicks off, we're fucked. This is
we're all
going to
die.
It was one of those places that theoretically had a backstage. If I recall, there was like this tiny little like
it was a bookshelf.
Alcove. Yeah, in the behind it. And it's like, I guess you could huddle over there.
It looks like it's set of a snuff film or something. It was like pretty sketchy.
I heard it was haunted.
But the first time I saw you was actually, I saw you in 97.
Wow.
And it was... All Black Comedy Sunday at Yuck Yucks.
Oh, yeah.
Nubian.
It was probably 98.
No,
great,
this
98.
Is before.
Oh.
Nubian whatever
Disciples
nights.
Or Prior.
Yeah.
No, before that, it was All Black Comedy Sunday.
Up at Young
Sunday.
And Eglinton.
Yep. And it happened once a month. And
yeah.
I went down, and I was on a date. You walked
How did
on.
That work out?
Yeah.
It worked out
you
for
think
a
that's
couple
funny?
Years.
You think that guy's fucking hilarious? Fuck you. Well, fuck you then, bitch.
You walked on, I think, to a crowd of booze.
Oh, really?
Or just like, just weird. Just
oh, muffle. Oh,
yeah.
Like, who,
right.
I was the
white
first
guy.
I was the first white guy to perform on that show. They wouldn't let me on.
And you killed.
Kenny Robinson has been a friend and a mentor of mine. He just flat out, he said, this isn't for you, for white people. Mm-hmm. And I said, come on. And then Russell Peters and Mark Trinidad and John Paul said, like, listen, put this boy on. He can do it.
Yeah, and you did.
And it was great. But
you
I couldn't sleep. It was like because the energy in that room was always on fire. So if I knew that if I could just get a hook into that, it was going to be explosive. And it was always a really good time. And it got to the point where I'd come to the club and, you know, I was the only white guy going to the club. So they're like, are you going on? Are you going on? And you can feel the tension in the room. Like, oh, he's behind you. I've never seen black people scared of white people before. It was great. It
that
was
is
great.
Where there's like one guy in the crowd.
Yeah.
Like,
there's another guy who's passed off as a black guy. I don't know if
Mark
was,
Trinidad.
Mark Trinidad.
Yeah. He's white.
Off.
White guy.
Was that totally put on accent?
No. That's how Mark talks. That's
yeah,
for real.
Like so many of
he turns
people.
Up the volume a little bit, but in conversation, it's not far off of Mark.
Okay.
He's very, still has a thick.
Because I saw him after at another night, All Black Comedy Night, after I saw you. And I was like, oh, okay, so here's the white guy again. They've got a white guy. He did pretty good. But I just remember you going up there to everybody just going, what the fuck?
I have that on tape.
It.
Yeah.
I was
you
in the crowd.
See it. There was like, it was, there was some tension in the room.
I was in the crowd.
Like, this
man.
Guy has got balls. I couldn't sleep for 2 days before when Kenny.
Really?
Yeah, I was so stressed out.
Yeah.
Because I've been lobbying for it for about a year. And they're like, no. And then he's like, yes. And I'm like, fuck. So I went home and I just kind of picked through the material that I had. And I'm like, this will work. Some of this stuff is just not relevant to this audience. And then put it together. Some nervous, squirrely set that I could, I was fucking sweating.
Did you do any race jokes?
I can't remember. No, I don't think so at that time. I didn't have that kind of confidence.
Smart
now,
move.
Yeah, because
now,
that,
but
that,
now
you
I'll do it.
Do
I'll
yeah,
always,
yeah, yeah.
I'll fuck with the you're black, I'm white tension. Which
Inuits?
Is,
would you fuck with Inuits?
Who?
Inuits.
Who's Inuits? Oh, native people?
Well, you know.
Yeah, I have no. The reason I get away with as much horrific and terrible subject matter is I think the majority of the people in the audience see that it is not coming from a mean place.
Yeah, it's not mean spirited.
The craziest thing I learned.
It's very. So I'm trying to destroy my own ego as much as theirs.
Did it ever?
No one finds it threatening. Because don't that, deliver that, that it in a threatening way.
It happens. I just did the show in Toronto, which I get some odd comments and stuff.
Fuck Toronto, man.
That's true.
Seriously.
I like. Yeah, there's no business here.
Yeah, great city. No it's, real
it's,
way.
It's
to...
crazy though. But
we all do our business out of this city. So.
Yeah, I know. We have to go out and fucking squirrel some money away in fucking Bangladesh, and then bring it back to Toronto. I bring food for family.
It's an interesting situation.
Why can't we make a living here?
When you play a show, like in Toronto, I mean, very often, this is a classic thing. You'll tell a joke that is like a constructed good joke, and like the fact that it's a joke will turn off the audience. I find people respond very well here if you go up and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe my day today. You know, like that kind of more conversational stuff, like... You know, there's something with the recognition humor here, I think, that's very big because we have so many different cultures. That's like, if you go up and you kind of go, you know, oh, like not Russell Peters style, but I feel like Russell Peters did kind of like put a signature on that type of comedy.
Yeah, he branded it.
You know, like, and that sort of just became a style in Toronto that people knew would fly, you know.
And it's become so used now. Every so other Asian kid with a... You know, a joke or two. Now it's just the cookie cutter now, you know, with the real Russell Peters, please stand up.
Yeah. The funniest thing, too, is like, I love it. I Russell did this.
But they respond to it. I have some friends a comedian in England who's Indian, but with a thick accent, and it has no reference to any stereotypical cultural stuff. Mm-hmm. It's more of an autobiography.
Autobiographical.
That's it. It's more him. But he doesn't get... His career would accelerate so much more by playing the stereotypical Asian guy. But he's chosen to stick to his guns, which is a very noble thing to do, but there's not a lot of love in that.
Well, because I think people want you to come out a lot of the time and say...
Do something that they've seen.
Well, do something they've seen, or at least go up there and be like, guys... Here's why I look like this. You know, like that's thing. Like, and then be like, here's my life story in three sentences, you know, and now you know, and you know, people like that for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Well, not all the time. I mean, you know, you don't really tend to go out there and do that as much. You kind of go out and say,
I just cry on stage now. Yeah. I just weep. I weep and go, you know what? If I could read, I could have been a doctor. It would have been fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And then I think at the same club, I went again. We went at same girl. We went on another date. Now we were going out. This was probably a few weeks or a few months later to see Gilbert Gottfried.
Okay.
And you were in the crowd.
Yeah.
But you were in the crowd with one of the dudes from Chokehold.
From Chokehold?
Really?
Yeah. Who were from Hamilton.
The Hamilton
Straight Edge band.
Oh, yeah. That was ages ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Had Chokehold even broken up by then, or were they still together?
It was a guitar player, I think.
Fuck, I can't remember.
I just remember. So I'm like, wow, there's a dude from All Black Comedy Sunday. He's hanging out with a straight-edge hardcore guy from Hamilton. So I knew you were kind of down.
I came up through the music scene in... like 93, things were kind of out of hand in Hamilton, so I moved to Vancouver, and it was considering music or comedy. I knew I couldn't live in that city anymore, and it was a dead end. No one, anything that was creative would be just destroyed by some fucking idiot. Anybody that was doing anything outside the box or nonconformist was met with hostility. And I was, you know, a creative person, so I said, fuck it, I'll go to Hollywood North and kind of come put something together.
In Hamilton, at that time, like, how were you manifesting this creative drive?
Oh, just being the social circles of a house party.
Yeah, yeah.
The novelty of that was becoming more clear and boring, and I wanted something more. I wanted to take some of the skills that I had and... social circles and apply that to a living.
Right, being like a fun dude at parties.
Yeah.
And still being met with people being like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah, yeah.
But you mentioned music too. Yeah. So were you in bands and stuff?
No, I never played in any bands, but a lot of my friends were musicians, and through like the skateboard scene and things like that, there was music was always in the background. So then very eclectic, you know, any music genre, especially at that time in the, you know, the skate scene, it was like the more rebellious and, you know, it'd be everything from George Michael's to Dead Kennedys. Right. They have this crazy mishmash, and somebody were more militant about their styles of tastes and stuff. But other people, friends of mine, would just listen. He'd come with, just to get mocked, he'd come with a Duran Duran shirt.
Right.
But really liked Duran Duran. Right. Like, fuck you guys. And he was, you know, he's all these, he has a boxes of Slayer shirts, but fuck, when he's for real with the Duran Duran. Yeah. So, and that, I like that kind of thing. And then some friends of mine in Kitchener did a lot of tape trading and stuff, where I was getting like these kind of hand-me-down demos of bands that early Mr. Bungle stuff. I was exposed to that. So up in that point, I didn't have any older brothers, so there was no vinyl laying around.
Right.
It was 8-tracks of country music from my father. Didn't the singer from the Cro-Mags just attack?
Yeah, he stabbed
Harley Flanagan. My dad, Harley Flanagan.
Yeah, yeah.
he went to the concert.
Psycho?
He's for sure psycho. I mean, he didn't go crazy. He's one of these guys, I think, who's always been this way.
He looks kind of crazy to begin with.
What a great frontman for a band.
Well, John Joseph is the singer. It's actually the other guy.
Yeah. You know what someone told me? John Joseph will give you a walking tour of New York.
I could totally believe it. And if you
That'd
haven't
be cool.
listened,
I would
you,
love
you really
that.
Got to listen to his book on tape of his book, Evolutions of a Cro-Magnon or something. It's half of me is listening to it kind of laughing because he's over the top. And then it's also interesting. And it's
biography?
Is
it just him?
It's an autobiography, and he's also reading it. So he's
I've heard of that.
You didn't fuck with the Mags under any circumstances, or else there would be huge penalties. And everybody knew this in the scene. Like, just these like weird sort of boasts mixed with like good stories, mixed with like his life has legitimately been like their lives were crazy. It's kind of amazing that they've achieved anything.
And they're alive.
There's such a crazy band to begin with, just as an entity, because they were Krishna, which was such an odd.
I don't think they started Krishna.
No, I don't think they did. Yeah. But they were Krishna before Ray Capo was. I mean, they were always Krishna.
Oh, yeah.
When they were a band, as far as I know, as long as I know.
I saw the Cro-Mags not too long ago, and they had a guy for like a half second jump on stage and go, Hare Hare Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Krishna Krishna. And so there's some element of that still going on.
Yeah, still going on there.
With John Joseph. But he's like 50. He looks like, not the same, but he looks like amazing. It's super weird.
Is he like full on kind of Buddhist?
Vegan, you know. He put out a book called Meat is for Pussies, right?
That his drug and alcohol abuse spawned all these vegetarian hardcore bands.
Right, yeah.
He took it, okay, look at I hit rock. So you got to hit rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just go straight to vegetarian because you had a bad summer with your aunt. You have to have a heroin problem. You have to drink whiskey.
Yep. And then have to be the Christ.
And then have a character.
Yeah.
Then people might read your books.
Yeah, you got to be sort of the Christ of you suffered so people can just go vegan based on your story. Because there's so many people.
That is the shortcut, and it's rude. I'm dying on stage every day.
Everybody's doing that.
So you can have fucking organic broccoli?
You know, that's another
thing. Fuck you.
By the way, here's a question. The difficulty of being a stand-up is, I find, so after a show, good or bad, you have adrenaline. How do you...
Cocaine. Let's cut through the bullshit. Cut those lines up. What are you fucking... Are you winking at me? Are you winking at...
Part of me is winking at you. You can't see what part, but... because I think... And then you meet, there is a huge contingent of sort of straight edge comics.
You said the word contingent. I went to school in Hamilton.
Some big words.
Could you put that in your own shit on the wall in a diagram for me so I know how to read it?
I'll do it.
Those hieroglyphs.
I mean, not my own.
Hey, I'm ready now. I just had a coffee.
It's too chalky. My shit. Actually, I guess if it were chalky. Anyway, enough about the content of my...
You're talking about adrenaline.
Talking about adrenaline.
Yo, Nick can't have any adrenaline unless the hooker shits on his chest first.
That's not true. I've never been able to afford a
shitting hooker.
I use the word hooker
just
so rarely.
From a Taco Bell and see which homeless people come out. And you'll get that brown wedding you've been waiting for.
The brown wedding.
How would you, if a girl, I don't think you really want a girl to shit. Look at your chest. Know how hard it would comb shit out of that gorilla vest you call the front part?
Yeah, I like when I first did my breakup and I like put a picture of my chest on Instagram, which is like, by the way, that's a very weird move that I just put a picture
of.
Oh,
yeah, I think I saw that.
Yeah, my hairy chest, and you wrote nice ass.
Is that what I said?
Yeah. And I was just like, I like that Jason's looking at my photos, man. My branding is really working.
This is helping.
I love it when my comedian pals talk to me on Twitter. It makes me feel less alone. And
totally.
You know, one thing I will say too is you're like a hero in Hamilton. You're an inspiration.
Because
like
I walk upright doesn't make me a hero. Thanks.
No, I meant to say Giros. Sorry, you're a Giros in Hamilton. There's a Giros named after Jason Rouse.
Fucking hell.
No, but like all these, I feel like there's a ton of Hamilton comics who are just like, you know, they really see you as like, rightly so, as someone who's sort of gotten the hell out of there and done a lot.
Totally. I think I'm living proof that you can, you know, I've had various levels of success and joy in my life, but getting out, people that stay in their hometowns and just become progressively miserable and complain, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
You know, no one wants to be at a party with a fucking asshole. Yeah. So if you don't like where you live, you get a passport. You get a Canadian passport. That's fucking golden.
Yeah.
Anybody who's traveled and stuff, you know, it's just a reality that Canadians are liked all over the world. You get treated differently, and
but you're trying to erode that.
Right? you're trying to
take a shit on that.
This is Busco downtown.
Showing up.
He has a maple leaf on his backpack.
Jason was just pretending to jerk off with a gun in his mouth.
You see what you want. All right, I was making a swan with my hands.
Did you do, switching it completely, did you do Hole in the Sky?
I did.
How was that?
That was cool.
Festival?
Yeah, in Bergen.
It's not just a festival.
No, it's pretty prestigious. Yep. Black thrash, just metal festival in general.
That's cool.
In the capital of, arguably the capital of black metal in the world.
Yeah, it was very cool. Did they stop doing it, though?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's done. I think 2 years ago it was a lot of work. They enjoyed it. That's the thing about in Europe in general. People in North America, this sitcom ran for 15 years. You know what I mean? Like, they do things, okay, right. It's not good anymore, then we'll move on. They won't keep tooth and nailing an idea to the end when everyone hates it. So they just ended it. But yeah, it was good. It was weird. Doing, because I've been doing rock festivals in England and stuff, but more extreme music festivals. Like I just did, I was the first comedian to perform in stand up in a Scandinavian rock festival ever in Metal Town in Gothenburg.
Oh, we're doing that this year.
Are you? Yeah, there's a good chance I'll see you there.
We've done it two times before, but
it's fantastic,
it's amazing.
Yeah, it was really good. So that appearance went very, very well, and I was actually quite surprised on. I knew people would come, but I didn't know that it would be super full. Like, people were standing in the rain watching.
Wow. It's a big outdoor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A rock festival in Gothenburg, and it was unleashed.
Which is another capital of metal worldwide.
Yes. Yeah, it's great. I love that city.
There's
a
Gothenburg sound at the gates. And
it's phenomenal city. It's beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. So, I lost my train of thought.
You were the first.
Oh, yeah. So I did the festivals, something festivals.
First of something.
The festivals are great. What did you say?
What did I say?
Yeah. You spawned this rambling.
Yeah, he started it.
He said, no.
I asked him about Hole in the Sky.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I did it. It was great.
Well, who was on that bill? Because I'm a big black metal fan. I've grown to become one.
I think it was like Venom and...
Burzon?
No.
He's in jail, dude.
No.
No, he's out? No.
Is he?
Yeah, I'm sure he's out.
Oh.
He's a great guy. There's nothing I like better than seeing some Yahoo in a Burzum shirt walking down my street. I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah, we're going to get a shooting this summer.
Yeah, this is good. Nice to know you're supporting this.
He sold a lot of shirts, man. It's
yeah, because people, you know why? Because it's like the easiest way to be like...
Dangerous.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I know.
And but, you know, more power to him. More white power
did
to
you,
Burzum.
When you were in Hole in the Sky, did you go to, what's it called, Fantoff, the church that he burnt?
No. I was drinking quite heavily. So they were doing tours, like heavy metal bus tours and stuff. Takes you all the old nostalgic spots.
Oh, yeah. Tell you, take you to the bakery where that record store used to be.
Yeah. And I was just in the garage drinking.
Right.
Yeah, so I didn't see any of that. But I go to Bergen
every
year.
We were in Bergen, and you were in Bergen the night we played Bergen, like maybe 2 years ago.
Yes. There's been many of missing, literally days. It's not even like
a. But it was
like
in Bergen.
Yeah.
Not for Hole in the Sky, but...
Yeah, I think it was part of a festival or something. What's your favorite festival to play? Sweden Rock?
There's a few. I like Wacken Open Air, which I just spoke at this past August.
Yes, how did that go?
I saw you
in the lineup, and because I'm going to approach them to do their stand-up there next year.
Well, when I did it this past year, it was me and Henry Rollins. I did 2 days of spoken word, and he did the last 2 days.
How long was your set?
1 hour.
That's cool.
And I just lectured on Kiss.
Really?
That was my thing. Yeah, like I came out in a bow tie. Yeah, I mean, I understand kids are there to see Machine Head, you know, when you're 21 years
old. It's a tough gig to perform in front of that audience because...
But you would go over because Brewer did it.
Oh, yeah. I've been about 7 or 8 years now I've been doing the festivals, but the first few years, there was a lot of adjustments and getting used to it because you're in a tent in front of maybe 2,000-3,000 people standing in the dirt. They've been hearing and seeing some of the most extreme music, eating shitty food, hungover, drunk, or worse.
Right.
And you are got to entertain them.
Yeah.
And half of them are, you know, if you're lucky, are there to see you. The other half are just to get out of the rain and, what is this? I don't know. So there's a lot of work.
There's like music playing in the background.
Totally, a fucking Ferris wheel. Right outside the tent. People screaming. So, but when it works, it's magical.
Now, you've done it. I know you've done it in the UK. You've done it in Scandinavia. And have you done it in Benelux as well? Like in Holland? And
Lowlands Festival in Holland. Yeah. 5-6 years ago, that one. I want to work towards this. I'm going to start doing some more panels, like video with some, not PowerPoint, but just some... When I talk to somebody live, Russell does it at his shows, and
he helps camera on the audience.
When he talks, because he's in front of 30,000 people at the O2 Center, and he's talking to John in the front. They don't know who John is, so his face is like. Psh.
But I've seen you do that. I saw you do it at a club here in Toronto, Sherbourne, and Bloor and Sherbourne. I think Kenny Robinson was the host.
Oh, the Groundhog.
Groundhog. And there's
that was ages ago.
Yeah, ages. Oh. There's a TV, and you were just looking at the TV. Yeah, you were looking at the TV.
That's
and
crazy.
You're just, like,
long
making
time
noises.
Ago. Danko's an old school comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
You're making noises while everybody was watching this TV.
Yeah, because they weren't paying any attention to the show, so I got them to turn off the volume and talk. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That room made my career, the Groundhog Pub.
I wish I could have done that show.
Didn't you do that?
No,
you came in later.
It was later.
It was late
2000, early 2001, and the Groundhog was just wrapping up at that point, you know, and I just would be like, I'm so lazy. It's the last thing you can be in stand-up, but like, you know, the idea of me going out to like Sherbourne and Bloor.
Wasn't that
like
the reason why I'd go out with you is to like kind of like push you out the door?
I think that the first few times, I feel like we just did it as like a weird, fun mission
At first, it was like, let's just... Well, because Nick and I were working at this warehouse with a bunch of musicians. And so it was more to entertain the guys in the warehouse the next morning.
I was between bands, which I think was like a very big deal. Like, I just had less to do.
And my brother's a big fan of your band. Oh, I like him, too.
Thank you.
My brother loves him. What?
Yeah.
No way.
Nick's got a record out.
I do have a record.
You don't have a record out.
No.
That's never kind of enticed you?
I was just going to pull this up. Yeah, I'm very picky. I did a Comedy Now in 2001, and I've recorded, I think, 2 DVDs and about 3 CDs, but I don't like them, so I shelf them. But I'm doing a CD that's going to come out, and this is the cover for it.
Oh, yeah, that's a cool cover.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I recorded, but I fucked up. I went out and totally pissed my set away. So I had to re-record it. I might release it as an EP, but yeah, I got to do something amazing. So I have to wait until the things are in place.
I was waiting for that forever.
Yeah.
And then by the time,
Bathroom as an outsider, who doesn't do comedy, I find when I listen to you guys speak, you guys are not in a band. You guys are just you, and I think you guys tend to overthink your material to the point where years will go by and you haven't put anything out.
That's a comedy. I mean, there's so many things.
You guys need someone in your lives to just go put it out.
Though? I will say that there's something with comedy that's weird where, like, the more you say something, like, the more you go on stage,
we're lazy too.
Yeah, lazy. And disorganized.
A lot of the excuses are based around insecurities about what if we put out something, someone will judge it. So there's a lot of excuses and hesitation. I should have had 3 or 4 albums out by now after 16 years, but I'm struggling with my comic voice and how I want to
see. That's what he's talking about, and he's right. Like, we all, like, I think that, I so think defined. Being, it might be a being Canadian thing.
You're almost
way,
even branded as a comedian more so than, like, a lot of comedians. There's a lot of names out there that sound really bland, but Jason Rouse, and then the logo you just showed us is very metal
and
friendly.
All the
there's a brand
you play,
there.
All the branding. Pictures you take, lots of you keep out there, you know. So it's
I'm
a thing.
Always
where,
I've been out there for ages.
Yeah, and no, but
it's you're people, in it. You can't see it sometimes, and I'm, as an outsider, just looking in. I go, yeah, you definitely have this thing.
Brian Posehn opened for Slayer in Austin.
How'd that go?
It went over well.
Did
it? And he was, like, very excited, obviously. He seemed like he was legitimately really stoked.
But the audience has also been spoon-fed that Posehn is...
Oh, his branding. Yeah, they know exactly what
he's bringing.
He's
on Relapse. If you're in Austin doing that before, I mean, it's no issue.
It couldn't have been, like, just any
other comedian. I would say there's very few.
And like I'm saying, like, there's a few of them who could do it. Like, Florentine Jameson could walk up there, but they've been, the audience has been schooled.
I think in some of these guys that have a hold in that genre of comedy in North America, you throw them into, Vakin or something like that. I don't think they have the same kind of fan base. It'd be very interesting to see how they take, because unless you, that's very stylistic. So if you don't have a relationship with that artist and how they present themselves, it can go sour really fast. And I've seen it.
Really interesting.
When
bottles comedy.
Fuck you. Get the fuck off.
That happens with bands, though.
Oh, totally.
Well, that happens with, I feel with
but
me.
You can play over. You can actually play through it. Fuck you. We're just up there. La, la.
Yeah, that's true. You can use volume to mask and
totally
defend yourself.
Everything up to 10. Please.
I mean, and then with comedy, it's just like, there's no worse feeling of, like, going up there and starting your set, rolling into it, and just being like, oh, I get it. These people are not my crowd. They don't want this.
Yeah.
Where was a time where you have you ever gotten that in a festival where people were just, like, not having it?
Glastonbury was a little chop for me. Yeah, I was interesting enough to them ride it out, but it wasn't a very good set. It was my, I think I just moved to London, and I a friend of mine that played this festival, Glastonbury, I saw a little bit of it on Much Music. I didn't have no idea.
Yeah,
that it was 100,000+ people. It was, I've never seen that many people in one place in my life. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the world class talent. It was more not my genre of bands, But it was so epic enough, you couldn't help. The bands were secondary. There was a circus going on of international lunatics that were there for a good time. And I was just blown away. Coming from Hamilton, I'm like, where are all the cops?
Right.
There's no cops here. Somebody bumps, gorilla bumps into me. Oh, sorry, mate. Sorry, can I get you? Bye, mate. You know, in Canada, they would be fucking, they'd burn the village down with that kind of, are you fucking kidding me? What are you looking at, faggot? Oh, I'm just here with my kids. What are you? You
know? I yelled at a motorist today.
It's fucking mental. So that was not my best show. And then I started doing Leeds and Reading. And it got a little more rocky, and then discovered like Download and Sonosphere, Bloodstock, and all these other.
So you just found your right.
I found my audience.
Yeah.
Glastonbury wasn't my audience. I could have made adjustments over time to have, and I'm still more definitely interested in going back.
Yeah.
And in having a great show like I'd have at any. I want to be as versatile and as potent as possible.
I think that's, I mean, that's like a general thing we as comics have, because you have it like drilled into your head, you know. Oh man, you gotta, you know, if you're really good, you gotta make everybody laugh. Yeah. You gotta like be able to make.
I don't want to be broad,
but then you're broad. Yeah, then it becomes a thing.
Indifference has always been my enemy. People that come up to me and say, "I hated what you did. I thought it was disgusting or unpleasant. You ruined our night." And then another person say, "Can I have a picture and an autograph?" They
both make you happy.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. I'm sorry. You know, I'm not sorry. I never apologize, but I completely agree with you. I think from your point of view, I was probably shit to you, and you don't have the same tastes or interests.
Well, you got a reaction.
You're a 60-year-old guy that is, you know, you came in here in a pickup truck.
I still get into it with people sometimes, like off stage.
Yeah, but you have all the balls, and then what I have, but you. I'm a little more menacing.
Yeah, I'm not menacing. Where
Nick is the guy who comes up and throws a dirty diaper with a brick through your window and then stands on the front lawn and goes, "What?"
Sometimes.
What?
I am. I you know, I was thinking about that. Like,
I'm a goddamn artist.
Yeah, like, you know, take this. Like, why are you reminding me about this horrible thing and then just staring at me, waiting for me to laugh?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you know. I had a show last week where the crowd was like not even listening. It was like one of these total nightmares. Like a cancer benefit that someone had asked me if I wanted to do, and I felt an attachment to cancer. And I was like, I'd like to play. Sure, I'll do this benefit, whatever. It's Movember.
Who booked you for this?
They were like, this is just like a friend of a friend.
That's like me getting a grand opening of a daycare center. Why? Who would book you?
But it was more of a thing where it was like the people in the end were kind of like, well, why are we have a comedian? Yeah, they can sort of do what they want.
I think he's drunk. Nobody, here he is.
I wish I was drunk. Nobody was paying attention to the bands, much less we're going to pay attention to the comedy. So I say, look, here's how it's going to work. I'm not going to host. I'm just going to go up. I'll probably just do one time, do like 10 minutes, see how it goes. I go up, and I'm like, by the way, the band can't be setting up while I'm going up. That can't happen. Like, they need to set up, and then I'll go up.
It's a nightmare. I'm in my act and some guy's tearing down a fucking drum kit while I'm trying to put it together.
It's insane. Or a guy's going like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because people in bands, people in bands that aren't going to go anywhere, which is like a lot of these types of shows, you know, like, they're full of themselves. They're oblivious to other people, you know, so they're just going to go up there, you know, oh, it's really important. Make a noise right now because I'm a guitarist.
I hope that's not an impression of me.
It was not. You'd be more nasal.
Your arms are more out wide. Look at me. I'm Jesus Christ.
You touched my guitar. The comedian's too near my guitar.
That's me?
Well, I'll see you in LA in January.
Yeah, we'll hang out.
I'm going from Moscow to Hollywood.
Yeah, it's amazing you're playing Russia.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, you're playing Russia.
15 minutes on a Russian television show, like a stand-up show.
Keeping it clean?
It wasn't a cleanliness issue. It was more, the impression I got from the mail was more physical than language-based stuff. Okay. If I'm on a long story, and they're going to subtitle it, and English isn't their first language.
Right.
So
yeah.
bits that are more physical stuff right. that I can kind of mime some of the ideas out that they can't pick up off the language.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was about it. Then they go, we're ready for your nudity. Like they said, I can get naked or whatever.
Wow.
But I won't on this show. I want to do something kind of, yeah, we'll see. Inferno Festival in Oslo.
Oh, wow.
I'm performing at Inferno Festival.
I do actually want to know, this is like a weird, I'm sorry.
In Metal Town, or that's not confirmed?
No, that won't be confirmed. I'm hoping, but I know they want some rotation, so I'm 50-50 on that. But Sweden Rock.
Oh, no way.
Wow. Sonosphere.
We just played Sweden Rock
I'm doing like 12 festivals in Europe.
Well, then you
Metal
know what?
Metal Camp, Metal Town.
We might meet up.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
And do you know who Sean Keane is? I think he's dead.
He just died.
Yeah, he just died.
And he was another, he's like the other Eric Tunney, or he's one of these guys who I would see on television.
Yeah.
And when he died, that was when it all came to me. I was like, oh yeah, I remember this guy. This guy, Sean Keane, you totally know, is like a Canadian.
He's really out there. It's wild.
Very memorable. He kind of, ugh, he had this sort
I of, fell, almost fell in the shower the other day, yeah. but luckily my father was there to yeah. catch me.
We would talk like this and lean into the audience, yeah. Move his head to the side. Very, very kind of like that 90s.
Yeah, 90s yeah. He wears quirk. A suit. He was yeah. so weird. It was great, though. Anyway, yeah. rest in peace, Sean Keane.
Yeah.
And I'll see you all at a rock festival. We're going to meet probably about 4 different countries before we end up back in Canada. I can see that happen.
Yeah, that's how this awesome. Happened.
Thanks for having me on the show. What is the show called?
The official
Danko Jones podcast. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, check me out on Twitter at JasonRouse666.
Hey, I'm the flans.
.com, all that shit. And hope to see you guys on the show.
Go on .com to find him.
Come and see Danko Jones, Nick Flanagan, and Jason Rouse at the End of the World tour.
Yeah, it's gonna be good.
That's good. It's called You Ruined Mother's Day with Danko Jones, Nick Flanagan, and Jason Rouse. Cool. Right.
Bye. Cool.